the number, the diversity of species that we're seeing, it was just sort of one after another after another.
An aerial survey in the Arctic rewrites the current understanding of whales in the area. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Monday, November 26th. Good evening, I'm Ellen Lockyer. Also tonight, addressing the problem of tobacco use among kids in rural Alaska.
We've had reports back that parents will use chew tobacco as a reward for their children for good behavior.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by Crowley, providing tanker escorts, fuel delivery, and energy support services to Alaskans for nearly 60 years. From Valdez to the North Slope, Crowley knows Alaska. CrowleyAlaska.com. And by Bristol Bay Native Corporation, generations of jobs, heritage, and history. Bristol Bay, a place that's always been. Online at bbnc.net.
2012 was a remarkable year for the federal government's annual aerial whale survey in the Beaufort and Chukchi Seas. Observers spotted several species that had rarely or never been documented in the more than 30 years the survey has been running. Researchers say the unusual sightings may be part of the new normal that has taken over the Arctic Ocean as global warming fuels sea ice retreat. APRN's Annie Feit reports.
On September 11th this year, low clouds covered the sky around Barrow. The whale observing team stationed there couldn't fly their preferred route over active oil leases nearby. But the weather was better in the southern Chukchi Sea, near Point Hope, so they decided to go there instead. Research biologist Janet Clark, a contractor with the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, was managing the team.
At the beginning of the day when our team was going to head out there to do those surveys, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, wow, I sure hope they find some gray whales down there because that's what we've seen in that area before.
The team didn't find any gray whales. Clark was shocked, but then they started listing what they had seen.
On that one flight was where we saw the fin whales, 24 of the humpback whales, 5 killer whales, and 1 minke whale.
So did your jaw kind of drop when you heard that?
Yes, I would say that it did.
Killer whales have never been seen before in the previous 3 decades of the survey. Fin whales and humpback whales have been documented just once. Minke whales, only a handful of times.
Just the number, the diversity of species that we're seeing, it was just sort of one after another after another.
The Aerial Surveys of Arctic Marine Mammals Project runs from July through October, with planes based in Deadhorse and Barrow. September 11th was a standout day for the survey, but the teams documented subarctic species on a handful of other flights as well. Megan Ferguson is a marine ecologist with NOAA and is project coordinator for the survey. She says it's notable that several of the subarctic species were seen feeding in the Chukchi Sea.
That means that they're using the resource, they're getting nutrition from the environment in that area.
And Ferguson says it was also surprising to see some calves. It's more evidence that the Arctic waters are being used as habitat.
They're taking their kids up there. So it leads me to think that there's kind of a reason that they're coming up further north.
All of the subarctic species were seen in the Chukchi Sea. Janet Clark says it's difficult to speculate why so many different whale species are spending more time in the Chukchi. But she says the massive Arctic ice retreat is likely playing a role. It's transforming the ocean. And she says it has scientists talking about a new normal for the Arctic.
One thing that is just stunning is how different every year is. The things that we used to be able to say that we could predict and go, well, of course that's going to be that. It's not that anymore. So it'd be very hard to just simply say, this is what's happening. It is really kind of this new normal that's going on in the Arctic in general.
The annual whale survey is funded by the Bureau of Ocean Energy Management, and the survey encompasses the area the federal government has already leased to oil companies or is planning to offer for drilling in future years. Clark says they did see Shell's drill rigs this summer and some whales nearby. She says the annual aerial survey isn't a good way to observe immediate impacts to whales from oil drilling, but the survey will be one tool to help assess the overall effects of drilling on marine mammals. In Anchorage, I'm Annie Feit.
Supporters of 4 men imprisoned for the 1997 murder of a Fairbanks teen are looking beyond a recent favorable court ruling. Eugene Vent, George Fries, Kevin Pease and Marvin Roberts are serving multi-decade prison sentences for killing John Hartman. There was no physical evidence tying the men to the beating attack, and the case has long-drawn questions about whether justice was served. As KUAC's Dan Bross reports, the latest ruling involves an appeal by one of the convicted men.
The November 16th Court of Appeals opinion finds fault with Superior Court Judge Ben Esch's reliance on outside research in rejecting Eugene Vent's appeal and grants him a new hearing. At issue in the appeal is whether Vent's attorney effectively fought to get a critic of the interrogation method used to get a confession on the stand. April Monroe Frick, a Fairbanks woman who heads up efforts to free the Fairbanks Four, calls the ruling a step forward.
Essentially what happened is this issue was returned to Superior Court, which is the local Fairbanks court. Judge Esch can't hear it, so it will have a new set of eyes on it, which is probably important. This case has sat on the desks of an extraordinarily small number of people in our community. So it's nice that we'll go back to somebody else, but it will return to Superior Court. And, you know, if at Superior Court they decide in Eugene's favor and grant him a new trial, the state will appeal that. So however it's decided here, it will be appealed.
Monroe Frick says the case will likely end up before the Alaska Supreme Court, a court which declined to rule on previous Fairbanks 4 appeal cases. She says the legal path leading to a new trial for Vent is long and convoluted, and there's another way to exoneration for all four men.
The people who work as activists with the Free the Fairbanks 4 folks, myself included, kind of have our eggs in a different basket, I suppose. We're our hopes are with Alaska Innocence Project.
The Anchorage-based nonprofit has been working the case for several years. Alaska Innocence Project Director Bill Oberle is trying to pry loose new information to leverage a post-conviction relief hearing.
I think our investigation is such that it's revealing to us that we have grounds for filing a PCR when we have all the information. Don't have it yet, but I think we will have it.
Oberle says attention focused on the case by Fairbanks 4 supporters, including through Facebook, and a $35,000 reward for new information is keeping it in the public eye, possibly jarring memories, and giving people courage to come forward about what happened on the October night 15 years ago when John Hartman was found beaten on a downtown street. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Derek Michael Stevens, age 30, was arrested Friday afternoon in King Salmon on an outstanding warrant involving four counts of sexual exploitation of a child from the state of Idaho. Bristol Bay Borough Chief of Police Rodney Ennevaldson says authorities in Idaho made his department aware of the warrant and the interest in Stevens in August, but until last week there had been no plans to extradite.
We were aware of the possible warrant that initially state of Idaho was not going to extradite, and they changed their mind Friday. We made contact with the subject, and he was placed under arrest.
There's not yet an explanation of why a decision to extradite took so long. Chief Ennevaldson says authorities in Idaho did not elaborate on the charges, but the warrant indicates it may involve photographs of minors. On Friday, the police department contacted Bristol Bay Contractors, where Stevens was thought to be employed, and made the arrest just before 3 p.m. Chief Ennevaldson says Stevens was new to the area and probably arrived sometime over the summer. Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Bumua talks about their new CD.
When we were mixing it, we were like, the code word was the brown sound. And it just kind of retro sepia.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station.
When you've made the decision to stop smoking, whether you've tried to quit before or it's the very first time, there are free and confidential resources available proven successful in helping you quit for good. Alaska's Tobacco Quit Line offers nicotine replacement therapy, confidential counseling, and support services. Because everyone is different, trained quit coaches will tailor a quit plan just for you. For more information, call 1-800-QUIT-NOW or visit alaskaquitline.com.
The official search for a man missing in the Brooks Range has been called off. 31-year-old Thomas Siebold had been staying at a cabin on the Ambler River since September. He had planned to hike 25 miles to the village of Kobuk for a flight out on November 11th, but never arrived. A two-week aerial search followed, but Alaska State Trooper spokeswoman Megan Peters says there's been no sign of Siebold.
We spent a lot of time talking to people that knew Siebold and what his skills were and different things that he could have potentially tried. We did fly the area frequently. We initially called the search on Wednesday, but then after looking at some more maps and looking at a lot of Mr. Siebold's skill sets, they decided to fly out one more time over the weekend, but they were still unable to locate any further signs of him, and it just gets to a point where you have to call a search.
An incomplete letter found in the cabin indicated Siebold planned to head out for a few days in the wilderness, but there have been no other clues to his whereabouts. Siebold is an instructor at the Teaching Drum Outdoor School in Three Lakes, Wisconsin. Director Tamarack Song says Siebold is a veteran of years of training at the school, where the focus is on low-tech survival.
We don't use map and compass for orienteering. We teach our students to make fire by friction. We teach them how to make temporary shelters out of snow if there's nothing else around.
Song says Siebold successfully completed a 70-mile trek in the Brooks Range earlier this year and believes there's a slight chance he's alive. After a week of harsh weather, responders were finally able to remove fuel from a tug that grounded off the Alaska Peninsula. The polar wind was carrying about 20,000 gallons of diesel when it and the barge it was towing ended up on the rocks. About 6,000 gallons were lost after the accident, but there have been no reports of oiled animals. According to the Alaska Department of Environmental Conservation, the weather quieted down on Friday, and a salvage team was able to lighter almost all of the remaining fuel over the weekend. The team also recovered 1.5 million pounds of frozen seafood. Now that the response team is wrapping up their oil spill mitigation efforts, they're hoping the weather stays calm enough for them to start salvaging the vessels. Statewide, Alaska's tobacco use rate hovers around 20%. It's gone down significantly over the last decade or so and is only slightly above the national average. But among Alaska Natives, the rate is much higher, in some places more than double. And often kids begin using tobacco at young ages. Jessica Cochran has more in the next installment of our series, Being Young in Rural Alaska, from the producers of Kids These Days.
Samantha Lindemann began smoking when she was 7. She grew up in Quinnahock in southwest Alaska.
My mom kind of smoked. She'd go on and off, so. But everyone else around me in town smoked, and it was a small town, like 30 people.
Not that the adults condoned the kids using tobacco.
We'd go to the store, and we'd get candy, then we'd have someone else go there for us and get cigarettes, and then we'd have to hide, and then we'd have to wait hours before we can go home. So that was never fun, always having to wait, especially in the rain.
They'd wait until they no longer smelled like smoke. At some points, Lindemann craved cigarettes so much it was all-consuming.
It's just like taking care of an infant to me. Like, that's how it feels.
Bethel Alternative Boarding School helped Lindemann quit. They require students to stop smoking and keep pretty close tabs on them. Having a son clinched the deal. Diapers and formula are expensive in Bethel. People around Lindemann still smoke, and the temptation is always there, but she's determined not to start again. Much of the tobacco use in rural Alaska isn't smoking. It's chewing tobacco, snuff, or an extra potent homemade blend of tobacco and punk ash fungus called ikmik, or black bull. It's a little easier to hide chewing than smoking, except at your dental checkup. In St. Mary's, dental health aide Bernadette Charles has seen signs of kids as young as 8 years old chewing.
Most times they'd say no, they don't, but you know, you can notice it, you can see how that tobacco pouch is in the mouth, you know, if it's been there for quite some time, and it has some sloughed up tissue, or it could be hard or red and wrinkly.
Charles says patients argue that they have relatives who have used it for years with no problems, but she tries to remind them tobacco use is linked to many forms of cancer. And cancer is the leading cause of death for Alaska Natives in the region. Laura Ellsworth is manager for the Nicotine Control and Research Program at UConn-Kuskokwim Health Corporation. The program used to focus primarily on helping people quit, but she's trying to widen that effort to include more education and prevention. Tobacco use hasn't been at the forefront of community conversations, maybe, Ellsworth says, because it doesn't fit with the culture to judge others, to tell them how they should live. She's trying to break through that barrier.
I like to get local community members, people who have been here for a really long time, people who are Alaska Native themselves, to bring the message back to their peer group. So saying, you know what, I am an Alaska Native person, I value our culture really highly, and this is something that I know about tobacco. These are the reasons why I don't use it. These are the reasons why I quit.
In Kotzebue, teen leaders have taken on tobacco use as one of their main causes. They focused on enforcing the no smoking or chewing rules at school and teaching younger kids about the health risks and general yuckiness of tobacco use. 14-year-old Nyla Ivanov.
Like this morning, I've seen somebody spit on the gym floor, and the gym floor is new. Mm-hmm. And smoking is really bad for the air, but not only it's bad for that, but it's bad for our community. I mean, the families.
Members of the group have performed plays for younger kids, trying to spread the message. Michelle Woods of Manilik Association says kids need to get these prevention messages at school because they don't always get them at home. Parents didn't grow up with anti-tobacco messages, and some don't understand the health risks to their kids.
We've had reports back that parents will use chew tobacco as a reward for their children for good behavior. They'll use it if a little toddler is crying. They'll use it and put it in their gums to calm them.
Ikmik has come to be associated with Alaska Native traditions. One study showed people who use it are more likely to participate in subsistence activities, to be actively engaged in their Alaska Native culture. But as anti-tobacco advocates see it, since tobacco was introduced to Alaska Natives by Westerners, none of its forms are truly traditional. Elmer Howarth Jr. is a tobacco cessation counselor for Manilik.
Tobacco isn't in our culture, but it kind of got adopted in. Like when you go hunting, you see your father chewing or smoking a cigarette, and the youth realizes that, and he begins to pick that up. And so we're trying to break that tradition, break that non-tradition of our culture, and restore who we are as Alaska Natives.
It's a message he hopes will catch on. 2/3 of underage users report they get their tobacco from others. So successfully reducing tobacco use isn't just about individual habits. It's about addressing the social norms of entire communities. With help from Sarah Gonzalez and Ann Hillman, I'm Jessica Cochran.
For more information on this story and to learn more on the Being Young in Rural Alaska series, go to alaskapublic.org.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by ConocoPhillips. The easy oil is gone, and getting to the remaining oil will be a challenge that will require the state and the industry to work together. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. And by Wells Fargo, providing Alaskans steps to help reach their financial goals. Wells Fargo Bank, N.A. Get a career in less than a year in nursing or QMed or professional cooking and baking. Additional programs and course information online at avtech.edu. Classes in Seward and Anchorage start in January, so enroll now. This message sponsored by Avtech.
More shoppers than ever before attended Black Friday sales this year, but not in Unalaska, where there are no big box stores or shopping malls. Still, residents managed to find great deals the morning after Thanksgiving. KUCB's Lauren Rosenthal has the story.
By 8:30 on a Friday morning, Merlin Baker is usually at work at Unicy, where she processes seafood. At that time last Friday, though, she and two of her friends were all bundled up and packed into the Arctic entryway of the Unalaska Methodist Church. They joined about 50 other people waiting for a Black Friday salvage sale to begin. Baker and her friends are on vacation until the next fishing season starts in January, and they were all eager for a bargain.
How many times you came here?
That's every time. She's always here.
They aren't the only ones. Unalaskans come out in droves for the Methodist Church's salvage sales, which are called Second Blessings. They happen a few times a year, and the idea is always the same. No tags, no set prices. People can take what they need and give a donation to the church if they can. The only real rule, according to several people who didn't want to say it on tape, is that there's no shoving in the sanctuary.
Oh yeah, it gets pretty, when that door opens, it's notice the door. I think they only really open one side, because by the time they open that one side, they can't really get to the other side because they all try to fit in there at once.
That's Christina Henley. She swears by the church's Black Friday sale because she says she can find good Christmas presents like fishing tackle. What she really needed, though...
baby clothes for my son, who is growing too fast.
There's nowhere on the island to buy items like baby clothes or car seats. So while people in the lower 48 and even in Anchorage were out snapping up iPads and flat-screen TVs, Unalaskans were a little more pragmatic about their Black Friday. Henley told me she knew exactly what to expect when the doors finally opened at 9 o'clock.
Kind of do an amen, hallelujah, and then when the door opens, it's go time.
Just want to welcome everybody. Glad you can come. Just want to remind you that as you come in that it is a place of worship. Just try to respect that as you're coming through. So thank you and welcome.
The shoppers pressed on into the church, streaming through the lobby where volunteers guarded the cash box and doled out free coffee. The clothing section was the first and only stop for Fidel Velasio, who just started out at Unicy in August. He and a lot of other processors had a specific goal at the sale.
The set. Yeah, that's for clothes for working.
For work.
Yeah, for work.
Once people found what they needed, the church started to empty out. By 9:30, the accessories slash houseware section was down to the dregs. A dented crock pot, some coasters, and a sculpture made out of an old mushroom. Out in the lobby, people made their donations and waited for taxis back to the processing plants. The lobby is where I found Amy Osana, a Unicy processor, checking out a purple and white girl's bicycle. Was it a gift for her daughter, or maybe just a treat for herself? Not exactly.
For me. I gotta use it for going to the store. Yeah, I gotta save money.
Seriously?
Yeah.
That's a good idea.
Soon enough, Christina Henley, who'd been looking for baby clothes, emerged from the sale. I asked how she thought she did.
Finding anything, that's good.
And while she'd taken care of business, she also couldn't resist an impulse buy.
Yeah, a stroller and a Speedo. Oh my gosh. My son's going to be the cutest, sexiest little man at the pool.
Oh my gosh.
In Unalaska, I'm Lauren Rosenthal.
Bamiwa has a new album. The group, made up of three Yupik men and one Inuit woman from Greenland, have been performing together since the 90s. Their new double album, Side A, Side B, offers traditional songs on one side mirrored by modern versions on the other. KSKA's Dacia Eaton has more.
Bamiwa's soulful harmonies would not be complete without the voice of Karina Muller.
I think what's special about this album is that there's a side A and a side B, and side A that's done just with the voices and the drum, and the other side, we have all kinds of amazing musicians.
Muller began performing with Bamiwa shortly after the group formed in 1996. Side A, Side B is their fifth album. Art imitates the artists on this album, who live in two worlds, celebrating and practicing their native traditions while embracing and incorporating sounds from the urban international city in which they live. Muller's favorite song on the new album is a Yupik song called Pulling.
We've been singing that song for years in many different ways. It's a, when you sing it, it's almost like a prayer. It means pulling from within.
The whole double album follows this dualistic pattern. Same songs, traditional drums and chant versions on one side, electric guitar and keyboard on the other. Was passed on to them by the mother of two other members of Bamiwa, Stephen and Philip Blanchett, their Yupik mother. But as Stephen Blanchett explains, the group is also influenced by the brother's African-American father.
Growing up with my dad, listening to R&B records, listening to Stevie Wonder and all these old jazz musicians and gospel music, and we mixed that with our traditional.
Stephen says the song he's most proud of on the new album is called Halibut. It's based on a traditional song from the Unungan people of the Aleutian Islands.
Unangan people were formerly known as Aleut. The language is Unangah, and their people are called Unangan.
The song is about halibut fishing.
It's really intense. It has this, ah, ya, way, ya, ah, ya, way, ya.
Stephen's brother Philip.
A lot of 60s and 70s style keyboards from like old clavinets. There's a lot of Hammond organ, B3, Leslie, and very simple recordings. And when we were mixing it, we were like, the code word was the brown sound. We wanted the brown sound. And it just kind of retro sepia.
Says the group collaborated with around 20 musicians to get those sounds. He says he most relished the opportunity to incorporate horns on the song Drum I Carry. Philip credits the fourth member of Bamua for composing several of the songs on the album. His name is
Asi Gairayo.
He most likes a song he composed called Bubblegum. He got the idea for the song, he says, from a kid who was chewing gum in a traditional dance class he was teaching.
He thought he was sneaky, but I caught him and I started teasing him about it, and he got embarrassed, and that's what I put into the song.
Bamyue is a Yupik word that refers to the tail end of a dance. An alternate meaning is encore, or do it again, something listeners will be asking after they hear side A, side B. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. If you missed any of tonight's stories, we're online at alaskapublic.org. Follow us on Twitter at APRN. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Dave Benninger in Dillingham, Jessica Cochran in Bethel, Alexandra Gutierrez and Lauren Rosenthal in Unalaska, and Daisha Eaton in Anchorage. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Josh Edge is our web producer. I'm Ellen Lockyer.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by
Northern Air Cargo. Since 1956, Alaskans have entrusted Northern Air Cargo to transport their freight. Thank you, Alaska, for the opportunity to serve you for decades to come. Winter in Alaska can be tough on children and adults with asthma. Cold air and smoke from wood stoves is hard on the lungs. More time is spent indoors with dust, and colds and flus are common. Take care of yourself and loved ones with asthma during these colder months. Get a flu shot. Talk to your health care provider about asthma management. Take daily medication and know what can make asthma worse. For more information, visit asthmainalaska.org or call 1-800-LUNG-USA. This message sponsored by the American Lung Association.
Increasing energy efficiency is an easy way to reduce energy consumption and save money. The Alaska Housing Finance Corporation now offers financing to publicly owned facilities to make improvements to increase energy efficiency. Find out more about how their loan program works and if there are public buildings in your community that are a good fit for the Alaska Energy Efficiency Revolving Loan Program at ahfc.us. This message sponsored by AHFC.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.